This podcast delves into the dark, the depraved, and all things to keep you up at night. Listener discretion is advised. Now, sit back, pull the covers over your head, and allow yourself to be taken on a journey through the abyss.
Hey there, pod people. This is your host, Ben, and today we have special guest host Christina again, so welcome back, Christina.
Thank you.
And we've decided to look at the Bobby Cutts case. What you just heard was a snippet of Bobby Cutts describing what a living hell his life has been ever since the death of his girlfriend and unborn child. However, since Bobby Cutts is actually the one that took her life and the unborn child's life, how much sympathy do you have in that regard, Christina?
I don't know. He went to my high school.
Yeah.
So that was a little weird when we heard about this, but I think that he didn't mean to do it. We all know that he didn't mean to do it, right?
I think he didn't mean to do it. That doesn't mean it was good or that it should have ever happened. But, so you were, he was, I believe, a couple years older than me. So he went to your high school, but you had never met him in high school, right?
No.
Okay. I have met Bobby Cutts on one occasion. He actually, I won't use their name to protect them, but one of my sister's friends actually off and on dated Bobby Cutts for a while, and he was older, and back then I think it was just marijuana, but he was always had drugs and stuff, so I always thought he was like a bad dude, right? But it's like, I think it was just like pot, which at this point my mind has changed on, that's not so bad.
But then he becomes a cop.
Right, then he becomes a cop, yes, and one of my friends, or ex-girlfriend's moms actually used to teach him as well, and said he was like ideal student, super respectful guy. So it's just kind of weird. You kind of say it yourself, like, we don't necessarily think this was intentional, but it is horrific, and this is the case of Bobby Cutts. All right, so, first of all, let's start with the victim, right? So, we're looking at Jessie Marie Davis, who was born in 1981, and she was 26 years old when she was reported missing, and then later she was found to have been murdered. She was close to term with a child that ended up being Bobby Cutts' child. Bobby Cutts was her on and off again at that point, fairly long-term boyfriend. That said, Bobby Cutts was also married at the time. They were separated from all reports, but I don't know. It's like, it's the same as the Chavisnes case, right? Where it's like, someone does this horrific thing, and in my mind I'm like, but they also cheated on their partner. I mean, like, I guess I shouldn't look at the little, I mean, not that cheating's a little mistake, but it's smaller than murder, right? So maybe we can overlook that one for now and move on. But yeah, he was the father of the, he had a 2.5-year-old son, and then he had an unborn daughter, Bobby Cutts. We'll also talk a little bit later about Maisha Lynn Farrell, who's got a weird tie to the case as well. First of all, Davis was last seen shopping in Acme Fresh Market, a local grocery store, and her mom reported her missing on June 13th of 2007 when she found her 2-year-old grandson home alone with bleach spilled all over the floor, furniture broken and overturned, right? So, Christina, I'm sure you don't have to be a forensic expert to realize that bleach is learned and used in crime scenes a lot, right? So,
yeah,
bleach gets rid of blood. So, yeah, she finds the son alone, or the grandson alone, and then this place is doused in bleach. At that point, they have several thousand volunteers looking to look for her body in the neighboring Summit County and in the Hampton Hills Metro Park area, which is surrounded by Cuyahoga Valley National Park in the vicinity of Cuyahoga Falls. Later we learn, actually through America's Most Wanted, they kind of were the first ones to say that her then, they said on and off again, boyfriend Bobby Cutts, actually led them to the body, right? So I'm not sure if when he led them to the body. I feel like you would have had to have already admitted guilt at that point, but maybe he hadn't. He just somehow was able to get them to the body prior to admitting guilt. Jesse Davis, you know, was, you know, they had a funeral for her, and it was very sad. I think you said you do remember when this was all going down.
Oh, yeah. Everyone was looking for her.
Yeah, I remember as well.
You know, I would have gone, but Mom was like, no.
Yes.
Involved.
Yeah, it was a very, yeah, I think everyone was emotionally invested in it, and then the arrests begin, and then it starts to get weird, because it's not just Bobby Cutts, who happens to be, I should say Bobby Cutts Jr., I don't want to say it's his father, but it's not just Bobby Cutts Jr., but he also kind of had a helper get rid of the body, and we'll get into all that. But first of all, so we're looking at Bobby Cutts Jr., and he was arrested and charged with two counts of murder. He was a police officer in Canton, Ohio, and he was the father of Jesse Davis's unborn child, who was actually going to be a daughter. He was the son of Renee Horn and Bobby Cutts Sr., and he was also married to another woman, right? So we talked about that. He was separated. According to Cutts, the couple had discussed divorce, so I don't know how true that is. I don't know how much they went into interviewing, like, his ex-partner, or if she thought they were in a happy marriage, or how much this went down. Because I think everyone just kind of makes assumptions about cases, right? And I kind of just assumed when this all happened that Jesse Davis was going to, like, tell his wife, and then he, like, pushed her or something to that regard, but I don't know if there's truth to that, or that was just my, like, young mind making up a scenario that made sense.
I think that we all felt that way.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it's not like he slit her throat or shot her. He, like, when I was looking it up earlier, it literally says that he used the back end of his elbow and it hit her in the throat, and I think that she ultimately, was it like, she didn't get strangled, but he hit her hard enough that it killed her.
Yeah, and I saw that too, that said he elbowed her in the throat, but I thought she hit her head on a coffee table when she fell. But okay. I don't see that anywhere, but I thought that's what had happened.
The only thing I'm thinking is that, like, you know, when you're in the heat of the moment sometimes and emotions are going crazy, and she was already emotional because she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And so, like, I've never been pregnant, and I don't know, have you?
not recently. I forget if I had.
But I know just from having periods, like, you can get super crazy and super, like, in your head and emotional. So he could have been trying to leave, and she was like, no, and then she was, like, grabbing on him, and then he just, like, backed
up. Oh, yeah.
And hit her. There's so many different things that could have happened.
Yeah, and that's a very reasonable assumption, just because she was very close to term, according to the reports. So my point of that is, when you're close to term, you're in so much need of help, right? You need your partner there to get you things. And I mean, she would have been big. She would have been hormonal. It would have been hard for her to bend and to move a lot and be on her feet a lot. So, yeah, I mean, if I remember right, this might be in my head too, but I kind of feel like the scenario that I remember people saying was that she wanted him to stay and he was going to go out and party.
I mean, that would make sense, because how old was he at the time?
He
was 26.
Born in 77, so he's a year older than me. So he was 40. Well, he would be 46 now. So okay. That was, gosh, a long time ago. That was in 2007.
Oh, you're so old.
Yeah, for real.
I'm trying to find his age at the time. It's not coming up.
2007. I feel like mathematically, if I'm just looking from where, he would have been like 29-ish, right?
Okay.
So he's a few years older than her.
Older than her.
No.
Yeah, because, I'm 81, the same as her, so
yeah.
I would have been 26 at the time.
Yeah. He's just a few years older.
So I could see him wanting to go out and party. I mean, being a cop is probably really, really hard. I didn't understand, if he's on a break, how did she get pregnant 9 months ago? Like, how long was their break?
You're talking about a break from the wife?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not trying to place judgment or, thoughts into things I don't know, but my understanding was that they were on and off again, and I don't know how long he was on the break with his wife, but there was probably some overlap. I mean, I feel like people that cheat on their spouses and partners, no judgment again, but I'm saying those aren't clean circumstances. They get messy, right? I don't think there's ever okay, no, we were not together during this chunk, and then we were together this chunk, and it's always clean, and there's always a space, and no one's feelings are hurt. I don't think that it works that way ever. But I could be wrong. Maybe right. Some ethically non-monogamous people have their shit together, but I think that just works because they both decide we don't care if we sleep with other people, so it's fine. So it's kind of a different scenario.
Oh my God.
We love you, pod people. it's just not for me. We'll put it that way. Anyways.
So she did file for a divorce, so.
She did file, okay, because he had said that they had discussed divorce. But there was actually a filing. Okay.
Well, I mean, yeah, she filed after he killed someone. So, I mean...
oh, well, yeah. I mean, that's smart.
You had to wait? What?
Right. I mean, that kind of makes you feel like she actually was kind of blindsided, right? But then at the point where... Look, number one, you just found out... This is what I would like to talk to her about. I mean, it's very insensitive, and it's been years, so maybe I would ask her if we were friends, but I would be like, did you file for divorce because he killed somebody, or did you file for divorce because you found out he impregnated his girlfriend while you were married?
Oh, that's a good question.
Right? I mean, because, she could just be like, fuck that guy, it has nothing to do with the murder, right? That said, for a period leading to an investigation, I kind of remember this part, right? Before the body was discovered, Cutts was always listed as not a suspect. He was just a person of interest. But I think we all kind of, at that time, knew what was going to go down, right? It was like, Cutts is in trouble. They just don't have the evidence yet. Because it's very hard to convict anybody of anything. Well, of not anything. Because anything would not have a body. But it's very hard to convict someone of murder without the body. It does happen rarely, but I mean, it's part of the reason why you have, Casey Anthony getting off, right? I mean, by the time they found the body, it was so late that it was so decomposed there was no evidence, right? It's having the body is huge.
Yeah, definitely. And the reason why I think that he felt so, he clearly felt so guilty is because they're doing all of these searches. They're probably not searching where he led them.
Right.
You know, so he's
right.
Hey, maybe we should check this place. So, I don't know.
Yeah, and he was actually interviewed by a sports writer for the Repository, which is Canton's big newspaper. For me and Christina are from Canton and area, so we know all about the Repository. For people who don't, that's what it is. I probably didn't need to go into that explanation because I think Repository literally means the news. But that said, they said from all accounts that Bobby Cutts was super depressed during this time period. He seemed really down. He was very sullen, looked tired all the time, and he was probably being internally torn apart, especially if, like you said, he sees people looking in the wrong place, they're not even gonna figure it out, and he's being ripped apart by guilt at this point.
Read something that was really interesting about his mental state. It said months before an Ohio police officer was accused of killing his girlfriend and her fetus, a California court suspended contact between him and his 9-year-old daughter based on a child psychiatrist report that he was emotionally and physically abusive to his 9-year-old daughter. She lives in California. Are you going to go find her and interview her?
I mean, I could try, but she'd probably tell me to go F myself. But it's, you know, that's just, that's weird because I had never heard that. And gosh, it's just, it's sad. I want to say it's sad. I like Mandy, if she's here, she would be yelling at me for saying this, but it's like, I get too much empathy for like both sides where I'm like, because to me, I would have to talk to the person that was his teacher again to know this for sure, but I feel like Bobby Cutts was just kind of, it was not boding well for the Canton Police Department hiring him, but I feel like he was just kind of slow. I feel like he didn't have his shit all together.
Right.
Right?
No, I can see that.
So that kind of makes me sad. Because it's like, he's got all this violent tendencies and shit, but it's like, he's also not like a member of Mensa. He's not out there like killing it in the world and then you just didn't know. Right? Like, because I actually have, I have a lot of friends, I hear a lot of hearsay about Bobby Cutts. Like, back in the time, like, when that was all going down, it's like, I had lots of friends that were like, oh yeah, I knew Bobby Cutts. He used to, like, buy us beer and stuff while he was a cop. Like, he did, like, according to everyone I know, shady shit, but it, like, made people like him. Right? Like, right. These guys loved him. They're like, oh yeah, he would buy us beer when we were underage. It's like, no one's not, is gonna not sell it to a cop.
Right? So, in other words, he never felt like he fit in. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're looking at it that way, he never felt like he fit in. He was always an outcast, so he had to do things to make people like him. And I mean, have you, you need to get into his friend that was found with, or like that also was involved. Because wasn't she a little bit on the slower
side? Yes, she was for sure. And yeah, we'll talk about her right now, actually. Myesha Lynn Farrell. This is kind of a sad story. I mean, it's all a sad story. But she also went to Glen Oak. Had you ever heard of her? She graduated with him in 95.
No, I hadn't.
Okay, so police raided her apartment, seized cleaning supplies, duct tape, amongst other things. The repository reported that a source close to Cutts had told them that he had asked a female friend to help her remove the body. Now, in normal circumstance, you wouldn't do that, right? But from all reports that I've seen in the past, like, not only was Myesha Lynn Farrell kind of slow, like, she had some learning disabilities, she also was very much in love with Bobby Cutts. She would have done whatever this guy wanted.
So was there a conversation, like, you help me?
It says that she was asked by him to help her.
Right, but was it a conversation of him being like, hey, if you do this, we can be together?
Oh, I don't think so. I think she would have just done anything he asked, honestly.
Okay.
I think he could have been like, hey, jump off this bridge, and she'd be like, I love you, Bobby, as she's going down off the bridge. Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I don't think so.
Okay.
So Cutts reportedly said Davis's death was not his doing, but he thought no one would believe him, so he decided to hide the body. So he didn't admit the death, he just is hiding the body, like he found her and he's taking care of it. The impression that Farrell was involved in moving the bodies is reinforced by statements made at the court hearing of July 2nd, and she was arrested and charged with obstruction of justice. Which again, like, Mandy would kill me, but like, I feel empathy because I don't feel like this person could have said no. I feel like she didn't have complete mental status and she was obsessed with the killer.
Right.
So I feel like seriously, like, she just got, but again, if you have someone that's going to go along with those type of things, should they be out on the street walking around?
No.
No.
They shouldn't. But I don't know if you know this because you've been gone for a while, but they've literally closed down almost every single mental ward in Stark County.
Wow.
Like, there is nowhere that you can go around here if you are not mentally, like, well.
That's horrific, especially because when I left, which was, I mean, obviously not super recent, but, like, there were two triple homicides that occurred right before I left. Like, Canton was falling apart as far as, like, once Timken left, once Hoover shut down, the only thing left was the Hall of Fame, and, like, the economy was so bad that, like, violence was getting crazy, so mental health wasn't improving at all.
Oh, no. And it still really isn't, but, I mean, let's shut everything down, because there for a while, I guess maybe it was okay, they weren't making enough money, because, like, Maslin's closed down. I think that they might have a place where they hold people at Altman, Mercy doesn't have anything.
Mercy doesn't even have a mental ward?
No. You would have to go up to, like, Akron. So, I think that they can hold you for, like, 48 hours.
What about the crisis center that was by, that restaurant that's in, like, a castle? Right by the park.
The stables?
Yeah, right by there, there was the crisis center for years.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that is still there, but it's not like they house people. That's just like that's where they do the phone calls.
They don't actually house people there. Wow, okay. That used to be somewhere where, like, if you had an emergency, you could go.
Right, but I don't think they house you.
They did in the past.
Okay, yeah, maybe in the past, but I don't think that they do anymore.
Okay.
I could be wrong, but I know that they have closed down.
But what you're saying is that there's very minimal, like, that's very, very sad, because it's, I feel like it's needed there more than ever, so, wow. Okay, so the subsequent court proceedings, both of them appeared at separate court hearings on July 2nd before Judge Richard J. Kubelis, and the preliminary hearings were meant for the prosecution to present sufficient probable cause to hold the accused. The complexity of the case at the time frame of the arrests made this necessary, as insufficient time existed to obtain an indictment. However, both defendants waived the preliminary hearing and the case went to the grand jury. Cutts was represented by Bradley Iams, while Farrell was represented by John Alexander Jr. of Akron. An request for bail reduction was made on behalf of Farrell, but it was refused after the prosecutor said Maisha Farrell helped deposit the body and lied to officers several times throughout the investigation. So she also was lying, probably protecting Cutts, right, for the most part. Because I would assume if you're helping this dude move the body, I mean, maybe he told her this was accidental and I just got to get rid of the body because they're going to think I did it, but there's also a good chance he was like, I killed her, I need you to help me. Because, I said, I feel like Maisha was going to do whatever he wanted.
One thing that made me question a lot of stuff is, how are you going to leave your son alone, your 2-year-old son, alone for how long? Wasn't it like overnight? So he was there by himself while the body was being hidden.
Yeah, I'm wondering if I misspoke on that part. Is it his son or is it her son? But either way, why would you leave a little kid there alone?
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know that it is his son, because if that was my kid, like, I wouldn't leave him.
Right. Yeah, no. And even if it was, like, her kid, it's like, how old was he?
2.
Yeah, exactly. So this kid's not talking. Drop him off at, like, a hospital or something, right? Like, drop him, take him to the police department.
Like, take him with you.
Take him, right. Right, I mean, there's, you could have left him on the neighbor's doorstep and knocked on the door and ran, right? Like, just don't leave him in there by himself, because, like, if you're thinking in any sort of way at all, especially if it was an accident, and maybe you can just get manslaughter, you don't want this baby who's in a room that's full of bleach fumes to suffocate and die.
Right,
because then you've got another death on you, right? You've got Jesse Davis, you've got the unborn child, and you have a 2-year-old. So if it was an accident, okay, you think he would have thought through this a little bit better?
Yeah, no, it was his kid.
Okay. I thought it was, but then I wasn't sure. So they actually were going to have 2 children.
Right.
Wow.
Which is just so weird. It's like, I mean, but back in when I was that age, like, this was constantly happening. So they had a 2-year-old. When did he get married? Between you have a 2-year-old and now you're 9 months pregnant. So, like, I mean, that kid wasn't even a year old before they were, like, trying to knock boots again.
Yeah, but that was a boy, and you said he has a daughter that lives in California. So he had to have had a child with his wife or someone else previous as well.
Right.
Who was older. So I figure he's been with his wife for a little bit at that point.
Oh, let's see.
He's just, look, so, I'd like to say, I'm not going to go into names or anything or whatever, but my sister's friend who dated him off and on was always, one of the reasons I don't want to say a name is they were always in a relationship during that point. Bobby Cutts is not worried about that shit.
Oh,
Yeah, so we could figure out the exact timeline of maybe there were breaks in the relationships, but I don't think he gave a shit whether he was with his wife or Jesse Davis and probably multiple other women.
I don't care.
He was just doing his thing.
He's gonna date all the girls.
He will date all the girls. He might have other children from other people. That's speculation. I'm just throwing out nonsense, okay? Yeah, anyways, so on November 5th, 2007, as her trial was about to begin, Farrell agreed to plead guilty to the charges of obstruction of justice and complicity to gross abuse of a corpse for her role in Jesse Davis's disappearance and death. Under the terms of her plea, she was sentenced to 2 years in prison, a sentence that possibly would have been lengthened unless she testified against Cutts. The judge said he would consider releasing Farrell on probation after 1 year had that occurred. And I can't remember for sure, but I almost feel in my gut that they did get Farrell to say Bobby Cutts did it.
Oh, okay. See, I don't remember exactly.
I feel like, and I could be wrong, but I feel like even though she was obsessed with him, in love with him, etc., by the time she got to prison, she did have her wherewithal enough to realize, this dude just cost me my life. Right? So I'm going to tell the truth. Like, I don't think she made shit up. I think she was like, he did it because he told her that he did it.
So how long is she in jail for, then?
They said they were going to let her out after a year if she testified, and I don't think she stayed in there more than a year. I think she got out quickly.
Ooh, I wonder if I can find her on Facebook.
Quite possible. You're looking for Myesha Lynn Farrell. So Bobby Cutts Jr. was sentenced on February 27, 2008 to life in prison without the eligibility of parole for 57 years. Must serve time for each of the convicted murders consecutively, with addition to minor concurrently with the murder convictions. But that said, there's a little bit more to this case because he was spared. This case being the fact, especially I think any time that an unborn child is involved, he was up for the death penalty.
Right? Oh yeah, that's right. I remember that.
Yeah, so they spared his life.
So, I wrong? Did I hear that Jesse Davis's mom has forgiven him?
I remember that happening too. I believe that is correct, that they actually like rebuilt a relationship while he was in prison. That her mom was good enough to, she didn't want that on her, right? So, that's kind of hard to believe. But,
it's a good Christian woman right there.
Yes. Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know how you could do that. I'm not saying you shouldn't forgive, and like, the Christian thing to do is forgive, but, like, I heard they had communication.
Oh, yeah. Well, because I think that she wants him to know his child and vice versa, you know, to know dad.
So, after being released from the possibility of the death penalty, sentenced to 57 years. He will be 87 by the time he's eligible for parole. So his whole life is pretty much taken. During the verdict, they said he just stared straight ahead, didn't show any emotion. I don't read into that too much. I think by that point he was probably numb, because like you said earlier, I don't think that he intended for Jesse Davis to be killed. And he did seem extremely broken up afterwards. You got to think at this point, they always say that there's like this super bond between mother and the male person, whether their husband or boyfriend, if they share a child. And at this point, they're about to share two, right? So he's got a two-year-old with this person. He's not trying to kill her, I don't think.
No. Oh, definitely not. I don't think so, but you could be wrong. Because, I mean, I've been wrong about other things. I always try to see the best in people, but I don't know. He always gave me the creeps, like seeing his pictures in the newspaper and stuff. Like, he has one of those really, really thick necks, and he just looks like a roid head.
Yeah, I mean, he's, like, that's the thing you gotta think, too, as far as, I was gonna say that earlier, so I'm glad you mentioned that, that she, Jesse Davis wasn't, like, a big woman. She was just a small lady, and like Cutts is pretty muscular. He's like a big dude. I don't know if he was tall. He was muscular. He was stocky. I'm going to read a few quotes here. So Whitney Davis, Jesse Davis's sister, directed her anger and grief at Cutts after the sentencing. "You got rid of someone that was an inconvenience. I hate you." She continued, "You used and manipulated her over and over, and still you sit there and you were not crying. I don't believe that you were sorry for what you did. I believe that you were sorry that you got caught up in your lies. I don't know that you would know the truth. Cutts took off his glasses as Davis's father Ned addressed him, "Don't even look at me." And he said, "Your Honor, he violently murdered her." The anguished father continued, 5'4", 9 months pregnant, that baby could have been delivered. So yeah, she was 5'4", like I said, she was like a tiny little thing. And yeah, 9 months pregnant, right? This baby's almost, this is almost an actual, right? The daughter's almost born. Like, you got 3 months. Right. And prematurely, the daughter could have been born now, right? Or when it occurred.
Yes.
And so Cutts does eventually show emotion, and his tears roll down his face as Jesse Davis's mother, Patricia Porter, spoke of her grief. "There are mornings I have to cover her picture up when I can't get out of bed." She continued, "I serve an amazing God, Bobby, a God that forgives and heals and restores people, and all I know today is that I forgive you, and I know it is only through him that I am able to do so." Her mom forgave him right at sentencing, so it's like maybe a year after the death, right? Like, that's big.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, this is a powerful woman.
No, I would have never been able to say
it. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing.
Right.
But she turned the other cheek. "I may not have family to go home to after this, but I pray that you make a way for him to get out of there and begin a new life and to be able to hold his son." So she actually prays that Bobby Cutts gets out of prison to hold his grandson, and she says in her own statement she's willing to risk losing family members to say that bold statement. That's amazing.
Right. And this is about her daughter. I mean, I don't have children, so I can't say that I understand that bond, but, like, you see it. You see that bond when people, like, give birth and stuff like that. Like, she is literally being like, "All right, well, you took my baby's life, who I should have passed away first, because that's the way it's supposed to go, right?"
Yeah.
But I'm okay with it. Get out of jail. Possibly murder someone else. I don't know. And then I did find out where Cutts married his wife Kelly in July of 2001.
2001. Okay, so this was 2007, so 6 years. 6 years, man, that's not a lot of time. They talk about the seven-year itch. That's when people start to get a little bit like, I don't know about this marriage.
They separated. They separated, though, Ben.
In 2006?
So they got a divorce in 2007, but they separated in 2003 because Bobby Cutts faced criminal charges after his police supervisors alleged that he actually had given his gun to a drug-dealing cousin.
He gave his police gun to a drug-dealing cousin?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So, I don't know. I think that you're right. He has some mental capacity issues. How did you get on the police force?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. But I can say, like, I didn't end up getting hired because they ended up laying off, but I went through all of the Canton Police Force, strangely, I went through all of the Canton Police Force stuff, like, which was, yes, yeah, so, like, I had to do all the physical exams, I had a surprise person show up at my apartment to make sure I was good, I had a panel interview, I had to pass the civil service test for police, like, I did all of that stuff, but my point is, I feel like it had gotten way more in depth, and it was not super long after the Bobby Cutts scenario. So I think because of him, they kind of upped what they needed, which makes sense, right? Like, they were gonna not let that situation happen again,
right?
So,
well, I know that one of my friends, after all of this went down, was actually a part of North Canton, and he posted like a picture of him on Facebook in his, like, Halloween costume, and they let him go. They were like, "Sorry, no, we didn't like your Halloween costume," so they fired him.
Okay, so that's right. That's super strict. I mean, depending on what it was, right? I mean,
very strict.
Do you know what his costume was?
I think it...
I'm just wondering if it was, like, racist or sexist or something.
No, I think it was a penis. I think.
Oh. Yeah, so...
that is one of those inflatable penises.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so they're holding you to a very high standard in North Canton. But, like, again, for people not from that area, so I'm from Canton, but the North Canton area, all you gotta do is tack on that word North, and it's like they think they're way better. Right?
Yeah, we're bougie here in North Canton.
Yes, North Canton's bougie. Canton, not so much.
But wait a minute, are you in a township? Because if you're in Plain Township, Canton, you're okay.
Right, there. Yeah, the townships are okay. So Jesse Davis's mother, Patricia Porter, also said this, right? So she forgives Cutts, but she does say this, which is, the child was so young. She says, the child knows what you did. You would not believe the story he tells us. So even as the child that was 2 ages, like, they remember enough bad stuff about Bobby Cutts that they're apparently telling stories. So I don't know what all he's doing, like, if there was a lot of violence. I mean, you would figure if he's elbowed her in the throat, whether she hits her head on a coffee table or not, he's probably struck her before.
Right, I'm thinking. Especially with his daughter is in, like, at 9 in psychiatric care. Like, why is your 9-year-old going to a psychiatrist? Why does your 9-year-old need to go to a psychiatrist? And she lives across the country.
Yeah.
So you really messed her up.
Right, right. I mean, yeah, clearly there's a lot of domestic violence and familial violence going on with this person. So here, well, one, Cutts maintained throughout that the death of Jesse Davis resulted from an accidental, just listen to this, Dave, accidental elbow to the neck, and asked the jury to spare his life. Look, the only reason I say it like that is, yes, we've talked about how we don't think he did this on purpose, but you shouldn't be accidentally elbowing someone in the neck. Or you shouldn't be elbowing someone in the neck and then saying when they die it's an accident. Like, don't elbow your girlfriend in the neck. For the love of God. Don't do it. Just, like, no matter how, if she gets to that point, you just, like, leave and go for a walk. You know, like, don't be elbowing someone in the neck. All right, so.
Or your pregnant girlfriend.
Right, your pregnant girlfriend in the neck. So here is what he says to try to avoid the death penalty, which clearly worked. But he says, "Lady and gentlemen of the jury, I'm asking you to spare my life. To imagine that I was responsible for the death of Jesse, the mother of my children and my unborn daughter, is beyond any words that I can express. Words cannot bring them back, nor can they erase the pain I've caused. But I want to apologize." So, yeah, that's what his plea was. His lawyer, Fernando Mack, urged the jurors to recommend the lowest available penalty, 25 years to life, to allow him to play a limited role in the lives of his children. I mean, given that his daughter, she moved across the country, and they said that there was this abuse, at least mentally, and then he's killed his unborn child, and then he leaves his 2-year-old son in this apartment by himself with bleach permeating the air. Do we want, I mean, the mom said, yeah, like her mom, Jesse Davis' mom said, yes, I want him to get out and see his child. As society, do we want this person to be part of the lives of these 2 children?
No.
No, right? Like, what are we talking about?
I can't even. And so what? Now he's working out, he's getting buff, and then he's going to come out and, like, beat him up?
Yeah, he's going to get buffer.
Buffer.
Right?
That bothers me.
Yeah, he has no neck. He's got one of those. Have you ever seen the guys that work out, or they're on roids to the point where, like, their jaws just go straight down? That's this guy.
Oh, yeah.
Mack acknowledged that many of the jurors might still be angry with Cutts for leaving his... Here, exactly what we said. For leaving his 2.5-year-old son home alone more than a day while his mother lay dead in a field. Little bit... I mean, you're lucky you don't get the death penalty, right? But ain't nobody trying to give you the minimum sentence. Come on. Come on, player. But sentencing Cutts to death hurt Blake even more, so he argued that this is still Blake's father, like it or not. So because he was the father of this child, people kind of felt mercy on him for that, despite the fact that he leaves the child alone for 2.5 days while his girlfriend and mother of his children is laying in a field. So now he'll have no parents. So they're worried about him having no parents. But again, like, as a society, I get that these people are all emotionally invested and tied, and they're grandparents of the children, but as a society, I think it's better for this child to have no parents than to have one who killed the other parent. And is also abusive towards his children.
Like, how messed up that child? I mean, At this point, how old is he? He was 2 years old.
In 2007.
Right. And, like, that's your story? That's my, like, you know what I mean? It's kind of like, sorry to bring this up if none of you watch Love is Blind, but it's like Zach on Love is Blind. Like, his mom was, like, a prostitute, and he hated the fact that he grew up the way that he did and all of this other stuff, and that's his story. And it stuck with him, and it makes him think that people are not going to like him.
Yeah, it's weird. Because, I mean, this dude's, like, an accomplished lawyer, and he could really ride on his own attributes, but he just tells everyone this story. But yeah, I mean, speaking of Blake's story, though, like, I forgot this part, but you'll remember as soon as I say it. He was only two, but he does remember this stuff. So the mom, Jesse Davis's mom, wasn't lying when she said the stories he tells, because remember this statement? He said to the police, according to testimony, "Mommy's in the rug." He saw them wrap her up in the rug.
Right! Like, he's like, "Dad, what's going on?"
Yeah.
He's having full-blown conversations with you while you wrap his mom in a rug.
Right, so why are all these grandparents concerned with Bobby Cutts getting out of jail and having a relationship with this child that saw him wrap his mother up in a rug?
I can't with people sometimes.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's a point where, like, you're better off without your family. Like, I'm all about family. But, like, if this is your family, like for instance, O.J. Simpson's children, I know they still have a relationship with him. They probably shouldn't, you know?
How do you even have a relationship with people that murder other people? I don't. Because in the back of my mind, and maybe I'm crazy, but in the back of my mind, if I'm hanging out with you and I know that you murdered someone, I'm going to think that you're going to murder me too.
Right. Oh, goodness. Well, the prosecutors actually, without the gag order in place at the end of this, were able to say through in the trial that Cutts did lead the authorities to the body of Jesse Davis, but they made no deal with him, right? So a lot of times if you lead the police to the body, they might cut a deal with you where you can drop it from, like, murder one to murder two, etc. Like, they made no deals with Cutts. Davis's father, Ned Davis, told reporters, "Our family, in one sense, was fortunate that we had some legal resolution, because I know along with us, there are families out there that don't ever get an answer. It doesn't make it any less painful, but at least this part of it was resolved." So, yes, they did find her body. They did know who did it. That person was put in prison for a long time. And he's right. There are a lot of times where, I mean, there's a lot of missing people that are never found. There's a lot of cases where the person gets off. There's a lot of cases where they have a body, but they don't ever know who it was. Even if they have a suspect, they can't prove it. So he's right in that regard. But, I mean, I can't imagine what the family went through in this. This was a horrific time in Canton. So, yeah. What are you thinking, Christina?
I don't know. It's like I'm teetering back and forth. Like, did he do it? Did he on purpose? Did he not? Like, was he threatening him? Was it just an argument? And, oh, like, why is this other woman the only person that this guy trusted to come over and help him wrap up a body?
I think it's just because she was so obsessed with him. I mean, like, because even if you have, like, really good friends, if they're normal people, you're going to call them and you'd be like, you'd call me and be like, "Hey, Ben, I need you to help me with something. You got to help me hide a body." They'd be like, "I'm going to pretend this call never happened. Bye-bye."
What? And all of a sudden you see that the call went through to Ben and they're calling you and you're like, "I don't know what you're talking about."
Be like, "I don't fucking know. They said some crazy shit. I hung up and then I went to the grocery store. I don't know what happened."
Grocery store. Because if I called you and I was like, "Hey, I'm going to murder someone," or "I already did," you'd be like, "All right, well, I got to go to Bueller's real quick. I'll be right."
I would be like, "That's fucked up shit. You should call Deanna and talk to her about it."
All right. Oh my gosh.
See what Jimmy says. I don't know. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I don't know. They had said throughout this trial, like, in all of this case, that Maisha was, like, she had learning disabilities and stuff, right? Like, they never tried to make it like she was or a normal human being in the regard of her capacity. So I think that that's why they were able to, like, go with her on, like, a deal of if she said that Cutts did it, that she only had to be there for a year, and then she was probably on probation for, like, 15 or 20. Like, they probably monitored her very well. I don't think she was just let out and forgotten about, right? But I think that the reason that they were so lenient on her was they kind of had the mindset that most of us had during times, like, that she couldn't really help what was going on. And she had nothing to do with the killing, from any reports.
Right. Oh, for sure she didn't. No, I don't think she did. But I also am like, how did she get a job when she got out?
Yeah.
The things that run through my brain, I'm telling you what. Like, was she ever able to be employed again?
I don't know. Because you figure it's got, even if you're out after a year, I don't know, maybe it has to be a felony still, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if it's a felony, like, I feel like jobs would give people a chance if you're like, what's your felony? And it's like cocaine possession, right? You're like, I used to, I don't anymore, it's been decades, right? Like, I'm good. But this is a little different. This is like, I rolled someone up in a carpet with my dude I liked, and we put her in a field. They'd be like, oh, yeah, well, I think they're hiring down the street, too, and we just filled up that spot this morning.
Right.
Right? Yeah, I don't know.
Crazy to even think that, but like also like trying to get an apartment because it's hard around here to get an apartment, to get anything, because everyone is looking for your faults, I guess you could say.
Yeah.
So they're like, have you had any evictions? You have a felony? Well, what's your felony? And then all of a sudden they find out, oh, well, I, you know, ever heard of Bobby Cutts?
Yeah. And depending on their age in that area, they probably have.
Yeah. So it's like, her best move would be to, like, if when she got out, would be to move far, far away.
Yeah.
Change her last name to Shabusiness.
Right. Change your last name to Shabusiness. It cures everything.
It does. That's what I've heard. Neck cramps get cured.
I would change my name to Shawasn't Me.
I love it.
Oh, Lord.
I know.
All right.
We are going down
quickly.
Yep.
Any final thoughts on Bobby Cutts?
Not really.
Yeah.
I mean, he just, I don't know. I feel bad for the dude because I truly believe that he did not mean to do it.
Yeah.
But I also believe that he was a very unhealthy man.
Right.
Very unhealthy.
Right.
So, his mind, and, like, clearly he had some assault issues. So, I think that he meant to hurt her to get her away from him. I don't believe that he meant to kill her.
Yeah, and I feel the same way, and I do have something, and, like, I don't, obviously, neither of us are supporters of domestic violence. We're not saying that at all. But you look at someone like Bobby Cutts, who, he throws an elbow, probably, like you said, to get her off of him, or, you know, he probably didn't run after an elbow and throw. It was probably some sort of circumstance where they were, like, tussling back and forth, and he throws an elbow, and whether she hits her head on a coffee table or just dies from the impact of the elbow, she dies. But my point is, there's a ton of other men assaulting women in that same regard that the person doesn't die, and they get to live their full lives outside of prison with their children and families and doing their jobs. And,
right.
You know, I'm not saying that because those people get away with it, that makes Bobby Cutts, like, a horrific victim of society. I'm saying, like, it's just super unfortunate, which is obvious in all regards, that Jesse Davis died from this impact, because the best case scenario would be, like, she survives it and then he gets arrested for domestic violence and they just stop seeing each other. But that's just not what went down.
No. So. And, you know, I feel like Bobby might have not known his own strength.
Yeah.
Also, and that plays a huge part, because especially in, like, domestic violence, like, he could have just thought that he was, like, tossing, like, get away from me. And then it just escalated very, very quickly.
Right.
And he might not have even thought that he was being as powerful as he was.
Yeah, that's fair.
So. Yeah.
But you also have to keep in mind that police probably are trained in defense maneuvers and I mean, like, the elbow could have been part of his training. Like, so, I mean, he probably isn't someone who's never had any instruction on fighting either, so he probably should have known his own strength and ability.
But
here we are. So
here we are.
Right. All right, guys, so that will wrap up our Bobby Cutts episode of Through the Abyss podcast, and we thank you very much for joining us. I am Ben, and we thank you again, Christina, for hanging out and getting this done.
Thanks for having me.
And again, guys, please send all of your prayers and positive thoughts to Mandy, who is still in the hospital in rehabilitation right now. Hopefully they can get her up and out of there as quickly as possible, but she definitely needs your prayers and thoughts. And so thank you for all of those. And then you can reach us through throughtheabysspodcast.com, and through that site you can also locate us on any podcast platform, and you can go to them directly as well. Spotify, Pandora, Apple Podcasts, multiple other ones. So thank you again. That will wrap up another episode under our belt. And as always, pod people, keep it spooky. Spooky stuff!